You're listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. Today, I'm talking with Anders about the best sources for real-world evidence that you may likely never heard about. So stay tuned. I first heard about these sources for real-world evidence a couple of years ago, and I tried to have an expert on this evidence for quite some time. So I'm really, really happy that I have now Anders to speak about Scandinavian data. And you may wonder why, you know, data from these Nordic countries is so, so special. Stay tuned for this episode, because you will learn that this is really the best source. It's kind of a dream for us statisticians. I'm producing this podcast in association with ESI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. By the way, there's also a real-world data special interest group. You may join that and join PSI to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the video on demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician. Today we are talking about one of my favorite topics again, real-world evidence. And I have an expert today here on a very interesting area of real-world evidence. Hi, Anders. How are you doing?
Hi, Alexander. I'm very good. How are you?
Very good. Before we dive into the topic of speaking about real-world evidence from the Scandinavian countries, let's first talk about your career up to now. What has brought you to where you are now, and what about your companies that you have started?
Yeah, thank you. So yeah, I'm a biostatistician by training, and then I did some research within epidemiology at the Karolinska Institute. And I started to work in the healthcare and academia for several years within this field. But then at some time point, I also started my own business and did some consultancies to the life science industry. And then I wanted to try how it is within the industry. So I joined Pfizer for about more than 10 years ago. And since then, I've been working in the pharmaceutical industry for 10 years. And from last year, I started my own company, Epistat, that works within the life science industry with this research area.
Awesome. So let's talk about these Nordic registries. When we talk about these, which countries actually does it involve?
So I would say, when you say, if you include the whole Nordic countries, that's Iceland, Sweden, Denmark, Norway, and Finland. Mm-hmm. But I, for the purpose of this discussion, I think we should focus on Sweden, Denmark, and Norway, and Finland. Mm-hmm. Leave out Iceland, because they are quite small country in this context.
Yeah, it's quite small. When we think about all of these countries, it's about 25 million people, so which initially you would think, like, compared to Germany or compared to the US, is not big. But I've just the other day I talked to someone who was working on a real world evidence project, and they had worked on these countries and also on evidence from other real world evidence sources for a specific area. And in their overall dossier, the by far largest proportion of evidence was coming from these Nordic countries. And that has to do with a couple of specific features of the Nordic countries that we'll go in today. So if you might think, like, well,
who cares about these, let's say, small countries? Yeah, actually, from a data perspective, they are really, really big. So when we think about these Nordic countries, what makes them so special when it comes to the health system?
Yes. So yeah, across the Nordics, it's all countries have a public finance healthcare system. The tax is quite high in the Nordics. However, the cost for patients within the healthcare system is therefore quite low.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very low.
Yeah, it's very tax and government.
Yes, based exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The other thing is lots of these registries. And whereas very often registries are organized, let's say, by community of physicians or by associations, this is a little bit different in the Nordic countries, isn't it?
Yes, I think that's one of the key success factors when researchers are reaching out to the Nordics, because we have most of them are population-based, which means that the full, it's nationwide covered most of the registries.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. It's a very unselected group within the registries in comparison to other real-world evidence data sets.
Yeah, that's a big, big strength that you have basically the whole population and not just this one insurance company or things like that. That makes it really, really strong. And also from a, you know, it's much more unified rather than, you know, every part is different. Let's first dive a little bit into the population registers. So what kind of population registers are there that are kind of, you know, nationwide?
Yeah, so there are several of them. We have, of course, the total population registry, where we have vital status on every resident in the Nordics. We have the causal death registry, where we have information on the causal death and the date for that, of course. Mm-hmm. We have the patient registries, where we can collect hospitalizations, inpatients and outpatient information. You could also add a cost to that hospitalization, of course.
Mm-hmm.
We have the birth registries, where we have information on the birth of the baby, but also some information on the mother. Mm-hmm. Then we have, of course, the cancer registry and the prescription registry, where you get information on all the prescriptions on the drugs across the Nordics.
Wow, that is quite a lot. So that's pretty cool. Now, when we look into other areas, of course, we have these data sets as well. But what makes it really unique in the Nordic countries is that you can actually link these all together. How is that done?
Exactly. So I think that's one of the first is population-based. The second thing is that each resident in the Nordics have their own social security number, and each registry collects that information. So you're able to link at the individual level all these data sets into a research database. So you can actually look at the identify some of the diseases in the patient registry, and then you can look at the incidence of malignancies for example.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep. And how are these registries otherwise used? They are not only set up for research questions, isn't it?
No. So that's, of course, that's one big bucket for them to research. But I think the idea was to follow, to understand the healthcare system, how it works, to increase the healthcare at a mm-hmm. daily basis.
Yep. Yeah, so it's also in the interest of the overall system that the data is of high quality. Yeah.
Very much, very much.
That's pretty outstanding. So basically, you have a whole data set with pretty much all the, you know, disposition, demographics, all this kind of information all together at the start. And then you can add on top of that these disease-specific registries. So how are these done, and what kind of disease-specific registries are there?
So we have, as we said, we have the population registries, and these are mandatory to report into. Then we have the disease-specific registries, which is not mandatory is mandatory in Denmark, but not in the other countries, but they include more detailed information on the diagnostic, management, and outcome for specific diseases. So we have, for example, in oncology, we have the specific lung cancer registry, or breast cancer registry, or prostate cancer registry, where you can actually look at diagnostic intensity, you can look at different mutations, outcome, treatment patterns, and these disease-specific registries can also be linked to the other registries, of course. You can really have a good detailed research database where you can do some cool statistics on.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. And I've also heard that, you know, there's some more kind of medical related data in there. So it's not only kind of the typical claims data, but also, as you mentioned, outcomes and things like that, even patient reported outcomes.
Yes, some of the registries, that's really also quite disease specific, but some of the registries are collecting patient reported outcomes, and also not only at baseline, they are also following the patients over time, which is really important.
Yeah. So basically you have lots of the data that you would need for a very, very good observational study. You have all the disposition data, you have the exposure data, you have patient characteristics, and you also have outcomes that you can relate it to. That's pretty exciting. As I mentioned, makes it really unique. I wish that would be more kind of a model for other countries around the world, including also Germany. Now, if I want to do some research on that, yeah, and probably if you're a researcher and you have listened to that, you're already kind of getting really nervous about, oh, I really want to answer my questions using this data. How does that work?
Yeah, there are some. Yeah, there is also overall governance, of course, when it comes to these individual data sets. So, of course, you need to have a study synopsis, a protocol. You need an ethical approval before you can even apply for the data sets. Then you can reach out to the registry owners. Sometimes it's several owners and apply for the data. And then at the end, sometimes, depending on who you are, you can actually get the individual data, but sometimes you could also collaborate with a CRO or a research company that could do the analysis for you. And then you present it either as a scientific publication or a report in some way.
So you mentioned the relationship factor. So I guess kind of just coming out of the blue and saying I'm mistakes and I work for a company, why isn't the best approach for moving forward? How does that work from kind of, yeah, building up the trust and being allowed to have access to the data?
I mean, if you have a good research question, you can come from your own company. But however, I think it's, as always, it's good to start a collaboration, and maybe you could identify within the academic setting there are some interest in your research question, then you collaborate with them on that question, and maybe they can help you on the research question and also eventually the analysis. I think it's really good that you need to collaborate in some way.
Are there any kind of typical academic institutions that you would go for?
That's very dependent on the, within which disease field you are in. But I mean, the Karolinska Institute, they have really good knowledge within this real world evidence efforts, of course, but there are not. There are several others across the Nordics.
Okay. So probably if you do some kind of literature research and you look for kind of who are the typical people that work on this, you'll find some contacts to follow up on.
Yeah.
But of course, people could also come to you, isn't it, for help?
Yeah, that's the next thing you could do. I mean, you could also reach out to me, to Epistat, that I want to conduct this research within the Nordics, and we can set up the collaboration, the study protocol, ethical application, and we can also retrieve the data as a research company, and we could do the analysis for you.
So if you think from a kind of overall timing perspective, I want to do these kind of things. What kind of is the turnaround time that I would need to plan for to before I have everything in place and all the report back, kind of from the first idea phase to up to the report?
That's also a bit tricky. Sometimes it could take some time to get in the initial phase with the contracting. That could take some time depending on your internal process within the companies. But then I think the time that's a little bit hard to calculate these days is the data extraction time, especially now when we have had a pandemic. It's the time has been prolonged quite a lot, but usually I would say that this kind of research could go within a year.
Okay. So planning for a year is good. Okay. Yeah. So if you need that for your HTA submission, things like this, you should get going. Let's say before you submit to the EMA, so that you have everything in time by launch. Okay, very good. So that is from a timing and project management and these kind of things. Let's go a little bit into some examples. What would be kind of cool case studies that you could look into? So can you give me some examples that would be, that you have maybe worked on or that you have seen?
Yeah, so if you're at a pharmaceutical company, I think you can have do studies across the full life cycle of a drug, because first you want to understand the disease area you are working with, and you can do some incidence and prevalence studies. Since it's population based, it's quite nice to get the true incidence or the prevalence of a disease. You can understand the comorbidities prior to the disease and also post diagnosis. You can understand the landscape of the current treatment patterns, for example, and you can look at the outcomes, such as overall survival, from a natural course. I think that's in the initial phase.
Now, when I have a new drug on the market, how can it help me there?
Yes, then you could also, you could also do, first of all, try to understand how does the drug work on this market in the Nordics. Is it, for all indications, is it prescribed off-label, and why is that, etc.? So that's one important factor. And also look at the effectiveness, of course, in a real-world setting. But then you
could, of course, also compare it to other drugs, which is really, really good.
That's also when you get, sometimes it could get quite crowded and you maybe you need to do some kind of comparative effectiveness study. And also look at safety signals, because as we know, all the clinical trials are quite short and we need long-term data on that. So look at safety signals in the real-world setting. I think that's also one of the advantages here.
Absolutely. And so that way you can kind of get a pretty easy setup, you know, post-authorization safety studies, things like that, or you can, you know, get lots of material for working with medical affairs. There's a, yeah, an endless opportunity, so to say, to work on these.
Yes. And then, I mean, and then as you mentioned, the HTA submissions, you can always, I mean, work on health economic models, populate them with these kind of data sources. You can add costs, socioeconomic variables, etc., onto this.
Yeah, and that is especially important. Yeah, if you want to, for example, look into whether your drug lowers the risk for hospitalization or these kind of things. Yeah? Which is really hard to observe in a clinical trial based on, you know, that it's not so long and that it's usually not so big. It's really hard. The other point is also kind of more harder endpoints. Yeah, you can look into whereas when in a clinical trial, you very often have more surrogate markers. That's a great thing. If you think about it from a generalizability point of view, yeah, of course, it's Western world data, of course. From your experience, how well would it be received in other parts of the world? From a kind of how relevant is this in other parts of the world?
So I think the reputation of the Nordics is quite high across the globe. However, I think the drawback is, of course, the population, especially when you're looking into rare diseases, is you will not get too many cases, of course. But I know this is well used in the US and also across in Europe, of course.
So from that end, I think it's a really, really valuable contribution to your overall HTA and medical affairs success. And as said before, it can even help you earlier when you, for example, want to understand what is the natural cause of the disease, or if you want to bolster up your understanding in terms of safety. These kind of things can make a big difference. So that was a really, really good discussion about the Nordic countries and all the huge benefits it has. So just to kind of summarize it, it is a unique opportunity to link lots of different databases together via this personal identification number. That way you have lots of the disposition, baseline, all these kind of data together, and you can combine it with disease-specific registries, which then help you to have also disease-specific endpoints and things like that. And that all in a time span of, let's say, about a year, depending on how fast your internal and external processes are. Well, I've recently seen sometimes the internal processes within the companies take longer than the external. It's a pretty, pretty cool opportunity. And if you want to work together, just reach out. I think it's a great thing. Thanks so much, Anders. Any final recommendation you would have for the listener on this topic?
No, but I think I could just add to your summary that this also comes with a quite low cost. That's also quite important because, you know, setting up a phase 4 study for safety is, what does it cost? This is 1/100th of that. So that's, it's a very, you can get really detailed data to a very low cost.
Completely agree. And also in terms of timing, you know, 1 year is nothing compared to setting up and running a phase 4 study. So completely agree. Okay, we'll put all these things into the show notes together with the link to Anders' homepage and so that you can easily reach him. Thanks so much, Anders. That was a great discussion.
Thank you very much, Alexander. Thank you.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain, who helps with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.